Welcome to June and welcome to Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I'm Vic Carucci, your host for a full hour of Browns Conversation. We've got a really good show for you this morning. It's been a big week in Brownstown with the announcement of the July 14th fan kickoff concert at First Energy Stadium featuring Bon Jovi and local rock legend Michael Stanley, and the announcement of Jim Brown's long-awaited return to the Browns organization. Plus, the team completed its third and final week of OTA practices. So, helping us to put all of that into perspective is Joe Banner, the Chief Executive Officer of the Browns. He has plenty of interesting thoughts on what his very busy franchise is accomplishing on and off the field. You'll also hear from the one and only Jim Brown about his new role as special advisor to the Browns, what brought him back to the team, and what he's looking to contribute to both the club and to the community. And to give us some thoughts on what Jim Brown's return means to the team and to its fans, we're going to talk with Terry Pluto, sports columnist for the Cleveland Plain Dealer. Terry will also share his views on what he's seen during the OTA practices. National voices are a regular part of this program, and this morning, no exception, we have someone who recently spent some time checking out the Browns in person. He's Clark Judge from CBSSports.com. Clark will tell us what he thinks about Brandon Wheaton, Barkevious Mingo, and other players, as well as the coaching staff and where he sees this team headed. All of that's ahead on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network, and let's get things started this morning with our chat with the Browns CEO, Joe Banner. Joe, a very exciting day to announce this concert and the whole fan fest. Give me an idea, first of all, of how this came about. What was the thinking behind it?
Well, you know, ironically, this came from John Bon Jovi coming to Cleveland, who's somebody I knew from Philadelphia, who was intrigued by Jimmy as an owner, myself, who he knew, some of the people we put in together here to talk to us about marketing and branding. And we had a very interesting conversation about a lot of the things we're thinking about and working on. And coming out of that, he actually called us and said, I think I could do something that can help the kinds of things you're talking about. And he's had a great experience in Cleveland. He's got a lot of fans here. And, he came up with the general idea of coming in and doing a concert that we turned into something that was the kickoff for the season. So wasn't hard to talk us into it, and that's really what started the movement that led to this show.
And it's not just a concert. That's the key here, is that, yes, John Bon Jovi performing would be more than enough, but to tie in Michael Stanley, a local act that people can identify with, and to put this under the heading of Fan Fest, to have interactive stuff going on around the stadium, I mean, it's a much bigger thing than just a concert.
Yeah, and I mean, I think that's really the point that shouldn't get missed. I mean, I've been to a Bon Jovi concert. It's a great experience, and by itself it's great. And obviously Michael Stanley, you know, stands on his own 2 feet in this marketplace as he deserves to. But put those people together with the Browns experience, a kickoff of the season, people that we'll have there at the show from the Browns, fan fest that we're going to create, intermission of Bon Jovi's show will be a fun event around the Browns. I think it's just anybody who likes any one of those three things, and I think there's going to be a lot of people here that like all three of those things. I think the other element to that's going to be interesting is, if I went to a Bon Jovi concert, I wouldn't be thinking about bringing my kids. I think this could be a really great thing for a family to do together, experience the music, some Browns, the fan fest. So I'm hoping that one of the things we'll do is bring a lot of families together and come out and together have an experience around the Browns and the concert that they'll really remember.
And there's so much going on with this stadium. It seems as if we're just kind of at the tip of the iceberg, because you have that scheduled, the U.S. soccer team playing there tomorrow night. I would think that, as you see it in a broader sense, that stadium can be used for many more events than just football.
Yeah, I mean, there's certainly great opportunity on small events, hosting charity events, corporate functions, our corporate partners, our suite holders, which should be happening every single day in the building. And then there should be an opportunity. There's not a huge quantity of these, but they're very compelling. They showcase the city in compelling ways. They bring a lot of people from outside the city. They generate a lot of tax revenue for the city. They're great entertainment opportunities for the people that live here. And every year there's an opportunity for one, maybe two soccer-type events or a tractor pull type of event. Combined with, and it varies greatly from year to year, concerts. And some years there's no great concerts out there that are playing in these kind of outdoor large facilities. Some years there's as many as three or four. So we just need to get in that marketplace, have people start to think of the city and the building as a place that can really do it well, attract a big crowd, have fun, treat the entertainers themselves well, and word of mouth will get out, and then the opportunity to attract more of these will be there.
Brown CEO Joe Banner joining us. More excitement. There will be an announcement tomorrow with Jim Brown coming back in the fold. How important is that to the Browns to have Jim Brown back here?
Well, I mean, I think it's really important. I don't know how a franchise cannot have a close relationship with arguably the most iconic player in its history. So we're really excited to be in a position where, you know, I don't want to steal the thunder of the specifics of tomorrow, but where Jimmy Haslam and Jim Brown will be able to sit down and have him part of this family in the way he deserves to be part of the family.
And generally speaking, it's important to a franchise to embrace its past, right? I mean, to have those players, those legacy players involved in a lot of the things that you do. For instance, at the news conference today, you had Bernie Kosar there and Hanford Dixon, and in addition to Brandon Whedon and DeQuell Jackson. It just seemed to give it a nice touch.
Yeah, you're always struggling to find the right balance is respect the tradition, honor it, especially the specific players that created that history, and at the same time be looking forward. So you got to find the right balance of being able to do both of those things. I think we're off to a really good start in that area. We had some really good interaction with our alumni. They've been really supportive of us, whether it was the announcement of a naming rights deal or a concert like this or just being supportive of us and wishing us well. And we want to find the way to keep integrating them, respect that history, especially with the most iconic of these players as we will tomorrow. And at the same time, look forward with excitement and energy and the kinds of things that make sports fun.
This is the final week of OTA practices. Just wanted to get some big picture perspective from you on what you've seen so far and some of your impressions.
You know, without any pads on, you always watch with a little bit of a hesitancy in coming to any conclusions. But here's what I can tell the fans about which I have no problem coming to a conclusion. The energy and the pace of the practice, the dedication of the players, the quality of the coaching and teaching that's going on is as good as you're going to find. And frankly, that's the foundation that good teams are built on. It may take a month, it may take a year. Whatever it is that you look at good teams, the teams that are winning year after year going to Super Bowls, that's what you see when you go to a practice. You see an energy, an intensity, a passion. You see teaching and coaching going on at the kind of level that if you came to our practice, you'd see now. And that's very exciting and refreshing, and it doesn't matter whether there's pads on or not. You can, and I don't care, a stranger coming in to watch practice or a media member watching practice or people that work here that come over to practice, it's very apparent. It's not something that you have to, you know, be tipped off at or be looking for. It's very clear that it's there.
What's also notable is that you have not stood still with anything. I mean, there have been additions. They might not necessarily be marquee names that are coming into the fold, but you continue to add players and make these, call them roster tweaks, but you definitely continue to make moves. Is the thinking behind that just to make sure, hey, everybody knows it's competitive, it's constantly competitive here?
I mean, some of that is competition, raises the boat for everybody. But you'd like to think we're putting together high-character players that are driven by their own heart, and their own drive and competitiveness. It's really about wanting to feel like we're leaving no stone unturned. And small incremental improvement is still worth pursuing. It's not continuity that leads to success in the NFL. Continuity can be the result of success, but it's not pure continuity. So when we see an opportunity to bring a player in, we said this all along. I mean, you see we've made trades, whether it's a Deion Lewis or a Devon Bess, you know, we're not hesitant to make trades. We signed a number of players as undrafted free agents, some of whom look like they have a chance. Whether it's the normal draft or free agency, whether it's an expensive free agent or a minimum salary free agent. We want to feel like every opportunity is to bring a player who even produces the smallest incremental improvement. That's what we're going to be doing 365 days of the year.
Joe, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thank you.
This is Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Terry, I want to start with the big news. Jim Brown's return to the Browns fold. How important is this?
Well, I think it's just important from a legacy tradition point. I mean, Jim does not have a lot of say in terms of player personnel or any of those things. But, you know, I just thought it was really bad a few years ago when they had the whole Ring of Honor thing and he wasn't there. And so it's good to have him back. And also, you know, fans love the history. And I remember writing a column at that point, you know, where Jim was in the separated from the Browns, that, hey, every year, fewer and fewer of his friends are there. You know, time is passing, and you don't want to let any more time go by. I know a lot of the players will be thrilled, because I did a book on the 64 Browns, to see Jim just kind of back in good graces with the organization, and so that they could have him out there. And certainly, when Jim sets his mind to it, he could be a tremendous public goodwill ambassador for the team.
Well, that's the perspective I wanted to get from you. How important, from a broader perspective, fans? Because as you say, generations yep. change and fan bases change. People mm-hmm. get older. People die off. Where, when you look at Cleveland and the Browns fan base, how big is it to them to still have the organization embrace Jim Brown?
Well, not just Jim Brown, but all these different guys, because the fact is, you know, when the team left and came back, they have not been able to have people who are, you know, legacy players and guys that you look at and say, boy, that's, you know, that guy is going to be close to our hearts forever. And so with each passing year, whether you're talking Bernie Kosar or Frank Ryan or Jim Brown, you know, just about all the remnants of the great Paul Brown teams, with the exception of Jim Brown, a few others are gone. So this is just a good thing for the fans. And I think it's even a better thing for Jim, because having our differences and all that, when you get older, I don't know about you, Vic, you go look back at some of the minor spats that I've had in my life, mm-hmm. go, boy, was that stupid.
Yes.
and I think maybe Jim did a little bit of that, too. Let's just all get back together. I give Jimmy Haslam and whoever else was involved in that credit on putting this thing together, too.
And I think the key, too, is the right role for mm-hmm. him. And I think part of the problem that existed before Mike Holmgren's arrival was that maybe the feeling on the part of Holmgren was that Jim was put in a position that might have been, I don't know, other than what he thought a legacy player should be. I get the sense, and we'll get more details about it tomorrow, I get the sense that it's going to be a lot more ambassador-defined now than it was before.
Well, it may have been defined that way, but Jim wanted it to be something else.
Yeah.
See, that's the other thing, too. When you deal with Jim Brown, you're dealing with Jim Brown. And he, you know, he looks at the world his way, and sometimes Jim even likes a little bit of tension. He likes a little bit of a fight. You know, that's part of his personality. It's part of what made him a great player. So I think at this point, you know, the ambassador role is where he ought to be, and hopefully it'll be something he'll be content with, and he'll use it well.
Yeah.
I mean, let, you know, Jim, just let people go out and love on him a little bit, you know?
Right, and he communicates so well, too,
yeah.
with younger people, and, mm-hmm. and I think that's another important element. Having had a chance to sit down with him and just talk with him about different guys, not only on the Browns, but players throughout the league who might have their issues, their problems off the field, he has some definite opinions on some of the causes for that, a good feel for that in terms of upbringing and whatnot. And I think there's a way that he can connect with some of the young men in that locker room that others can't.
Yeah, I hope so, just as long as he doesn't think he's an assistant coach.
Right, yeah, the difference between...
Right, I'm just telling you that...
Life coach, maybe.
Yeah.
Life coaching, yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
So, Terry, let's talk about this Browns, this current Browns team, and you've had time to come out to OTAs, watch the practices, mm-hmm. and some of your takeaways. I know from the standpoint, let's get the quarterback thing out of the way first. You have a real sense that this should be something that is driven by Brandon Whedon, and that this team kind of puts its efforts into getting him right and trusting in him to do the job versus maybe something else going on.
Well, I think you would be very hard-pressed to find somebody who's been in the league for a while and would look at Brandon Whedon with 15 NFL starts going into the second year, Jason Campbell with, I think it's something like 60-some starts, or Brian Hoyer was going into his fifth year with one start, and say, you know what we need to do? We need to hand this job to Brian Hoyer, or we need to hand this job to Jason Campbell. They would say, no, we have a pretty good idea who those guys are, and we think Campbell could be, you know, an okay starter. He's a good backup. Hoyer, let's face it, he's been through several teams. He's it's a remarkable thing. He's earned his way into the league being an undrafted free agent, but let's not go overboard. Whedon is the guy with the ability that we really don't know how far he can go. And you put him in the system where he's in the shotgun, which is what he was in college. You accent his being able to throw downfield. You hide some of the weaknesses with two experienced offensive play callers in Chizinski and Turner. And then you'll know at the end of the year what kind of player he is. Whereas if you put Campbell in there, you know what Campbell is right now. I mean, you really
right.
do.
71 starts. Yeah,
yeah,
you should.
And he's okay. I mean, that's it. But he's not going to be better than that, and you would love to have him as a backup. And Brian Hoyer, you know, Arizona, frankly, let him go. I mean, he was a guy that they've been looking for quarterbacks. And so we'll see. But he's a really good third guy, and I like the threesome of quarterbacks this year than the last threesome that went through here, where you had McCoy and Thad Lewis. But this has got to be about Whedon and finding out about him, putting him in positions where he could do well. And I think we're going to see that he will be a better quarterback this year. I'd be stunned. He's also got Devon Best now to throw to. He didn't have a guy like that before. Best has impressed me in a couple of practices I've seen.
Terry Pluto from the Cleveland Plain Dealer. So, Terry, the other things that jump out, a lot of people have talked about what a really good offseason this has been for Josh Gordon and the mm-hmm. obvious reason that he didn't have one last year. But it seems that just looking at some of the stuff you've written for the PD, you're even more impressed with what Greg Luddle has shown.
Yeah, and that's talking to some of the football people, too, say that he's really starting to figure it out. You know, I think the second half of last year he did. And let's face it, he didn't play his last year, at his final year at North Carolina, the agent thing. So he sits out that whole year. He plays 2 years. And most of these guys, it's really in their third year where they begin to understand what the league's about. And so I think Little is a guy that Gordon will make more big plays. But Little could be a guy that could be a very good receiver on this team. Also, you got to be careful, Vic, and you've been around football much longer than I have on, you know, these OTAs. It's millionaires in shorts playing touch football.
Right.
And so guys that are really fast and so on will look very good because nobody's getting hit. Well, right. One thing about Greg Little, he likes to hit people. He takes hits. He's durable. He's an excellent blocker. So when we see him catching passes and getting open, we know that he's not going to be a guy that's going to be knocked off his spot or intimidated by contact once it starts. If anything, he'll initiate it. He likes it.
Yeah, he does. And the other thing I'm hoping for, I call it the Devon Best factor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hoping that Greg Little, as he does, pays attention to everything that's going on out there, watches how Devon Best goes about his business, watches how consistent he is
yeah.
in catching the football, and then says, you know what happens when you catch the football all the time? Quarterback looks to throw to you.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm just thinking, and maybe it's more hoping than thinking, that Little sees that and it registers with him.
Well, the second half of last year, I had him with 2 drops the last 8 games. So, you know,
yeah.
that's pretty good.
Yeah, 6 and overall, right, I think it was.
6 overall, and
year.
If you go to Pro Football Focus, they're a little, actually great drops, a little more like I do. They're a little tougher on it. I think they had him with 8, but they only had him with 2 in the second half also, second half of the season. So, point being, there was a marked improvement, and not only that, he was being thrown to far more often in the second half of the season than the first. So it isn't that, well, you drop fewer balls because they threw less to him. No, they've been thrown. They threw a little more because why? Like you just said, he caught it.
So is there a way that maybe the people who have been so concerned, frustrated, whatever the word is, about the receiving core of the Browns and the passing game in general, can maybe have something now to grab onto? We've said Josh Gordon should be the leading guy and should be even a more explosive guy than he was, that he demonstrated toward the mid and second half of last season. If Little is making the progress we think he is, we know the impact that Best can have as a consistent slot receiver. And then you think about a guy like a Travis Benjamin possibly
mm-hmm.
impacting with his speed, impacting the receiving core more than he did as a rookie. Should we be more excited about the prospect that bigger plays are to come in the passing game?
Well, so this way, if it doesn't happen with that group, then you need a new quarterback. I mean,
yeah.
get right down to it.
Yeah.
You've got the right offense. You've got players that are improving. Because right now, you know, Little's in his third year. Best has been around. Benjamin is and Gordon are in their second seasons. You know, if David Nelson gets healthy and can play, he's been around. The big question will be, I don't know what tight end they're going to throw to. I mean, I know we've got Cameron, but you know, he has to prove he can stay healthy and he can do it. The rest of those guys are just kind of blockers and, you know, people like that. But I'm encouraged by that part of it. I really am, because the receivers got an upgrade in Best. They're more experienced, and the offense should fit the quarterback and the receivers better.
And I think, too, this offense, the Browns threw to running backs previously under Pat Shurmur.
Right.
I think there's even more of that that's going to happen with this, with Trent Richardson and this running back receiving game, if you will, because you just look at a lot of the plays that are being run in OTAs, mm-hmm. and backs do catch a lot of passes.
I talked to Deion Lewis, and he thinks he could be a factor in everything, because when you're 5'2" or whatever he is, to make the league, you got to have tremendous confidence.
Right.
But I think he's right in the passing game. He definitely can, because you get him the ball out in some room and let him run, he could be very impressive. Obanaya is a nice receiver out of the backfield. They brought back Brandon Jackson because he can catch the ball. And I know, too, they look at that group and they say, we think Richardson's going to be all right, but he has had some injuries. They look at Hardesty and they say, well, we hope he's all right, but he's had a lot of injuries.
Yeah.
So let's load up with these running backs behind him. So we got Obanaya and you got Lewis. And you've got Jackson, and maybe they even bring in somebody else. I don't know. But the point being, they want some depth back there. They don't want it like a few years ago. Remember when they ended up having to pull Benoit off the street and start him?
Yeah. No, they don't want to go back to that.
Yeah.
You made one thing I want to make sure we cover. In a recent column you wrote, you made a point that the feeling of the Browns hierarchy is that too many players mm-hmm. had a sense of entitlement, and when you make moves like bringing in a Brian Hoyer, as they did after the draft and other acquisitions, that you do this with an eye toward getting rid of that feeling.
Yes, and to let these guys know that, look, we're always looking for somebody better. And if we can find somebody better, we're going to bring them in. And so I suggest you do your homework, just like that, real simple. And so Brandon Jackson joins the other running backs. They were able to get Brandon Jackson. I don't think $1 of his contract's guaranteed, from what I heard. I haven't seen the final numbers, but that's what I believe. But you look at Brandon Jackson, actually when he played right at the end of the season, he didn't look bad.
No, he didn't. There's another guy, if he can stay healthy, what he could contribute, mm-hmm. and I think it's quite a bit. He's good at blocking. He's good at receiving. I think he's a good fit for this offense.
He's a guy, I think, only had like 2 penalties in the last 4 years when he was playing in Green Bay. It's like a guy who knows what he's doing, and that's what they want. So, yes, they felt that too many of the young players were simply handed the job. And, hey, Greg Little was one of those guys. And some others, and say, hey, it's all yours. But they looked behind them, and they didn't see anybody there to press them. So, at first, when they get coaching, they think, well, my way is better than the coach's way. Besides, who's he going to put in? Where I think they want the feeling now that, look, I may be better than Brandon Jackson, but Brandon Jackson's played in this league for 5 years, and you can put him in the game and not embarrass yourself.
Right.
I may be better than this guy. I may be better than David Nelson, some guy thinks, okay, a young guy. But, David Nelson, if he's healthy, he caught 61 balls here. So that's the feeling that they're trying to – one of the Browns people told me, some of these guys may hardly get into games, but the impact they can make in practice, and just the fact that when you look over your shoulder, there's a viable player behind you.
Yeah, it's a psychological thing, a psych game.
Right, and football likes all that. They like all this. They play the mind games,
yes.
and they want to squeeze you a little bit mentally and everything because the fact that the game does that to you. Eric Mangini was very good one time explaining that whole thing for me, how he always cranked up the pressure, the pressure. He goes, because the game itself, it feels like you're right on the edge of chaos a lot. It's fast, it's violent. You have to make quick decisions. And if you're not prepared during the week, it just shows up in the weekends. And he said, so this way, that's why he goes, our coaches will walk down the hallway and then see a player and then suddenly ask him something we talked about in one of the meetings yesterday.
Makes a lot of sense.
Guys are doing the exact same thing.
Terry, thank you so much for the insights, the knowledge, and we will catch up with you again soon.
Very good, Vic.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Jim, a very exciting day. Welcome back to the Browns.
Thank you. It's been very exciting.
Yeah, let's talk about this. The role of special advisor. What are some of the things you want to achieve in this role?
Well, the bottom line is we want to have success. Success is our goal. But having said that, I would like to have an effect on the players. I would like to be there for them. I'd like to be able to discuss things with them. I would like to have a certain kind of relationship with the coaches, and of course have a relationship with the owners, and have that translate into how the players approach the game, how they play the game, and how we as Cleveland Browns deal with the community. So it seems like a big order. But if you look at it, we're dealing in community already. Reggie Rucker is president of AmeriCan, but he's also president of the Mayor's Alliance. And that work has been continuing, and it will increase now that the Browns have new ownership. And the players will be my real job. But I think the way that we always relate to each other, see, I'm old, but I'm still a player. And when I sit down, I'm not sitting down with the player as a coach, I'm sitting down with the player as another player. And if I can have an effect upon them, which means to motivate them to really work to be better on an individual level, then I think that'll pay dividends.
You have such a deep understanding, too, of the psychology of the players and kind of as human beings. I mean, you are more than just someone who talks football with people. You go very deep in these discussions. So if you can discuss how you're going to connect with guys, as you mentioned, you're 77 and there's a 50-plus year age gap with between you and a lot of these guys. How you make those connections?
Well, I'll tell you what's so funny. I've already made a connection with Trent Richardson, who was the third guy in the draft that was chosen. So, you know, he has a big value. There's a big investment in him. And he's shown the flashes that says he's going to be a great player. I mentioned that he was ordinary. I thought he was an ordinary back coming out of, Alabama was. And people took that a certain way. But he didn't. He did not take it as a negative. And when we met, that was not an issue. And just think what that showed me, because that's a tester. You know, you come out and you praise someone before they do anything. There's a Heisman Trophy winner. And how many times Heisman Trophy winners fail? So when you give a guy a challenge and he steps up to that challenge, not that he did it for me, but he shows that he is going to play football in regards of what's being said, he's not going to let it affect him and become his issue. So if he'd taken that as an issue, then what would happen with his ability to apply himself to be to perfection in his own game? And so in our conversations, we had great conversations because he could talk straight to me and I could talk straight to him. And he revealed to me some things that he hoped would be changed, you know, with the organization, how he felt about other things, his personal life. I had a good insight into that. So the players, they know that there's some people that, doesn't matter how old they are, they can relate, because I respect players and I respect people. And it doesn't go by age or power or money. I respect people for what they are. So it's going to be a trip to relate, you know, mentally to Trent and the other players that will be available to me. And I'm really looking forward to that, because I do it anyway. But now I can do it for the Cleveland Browns.
You've seen the changes this club has gone through. Just based on what you see of what Jimmy Haslam has put in place with Joe Banner and Mike Lombardi and Coach Jedzinski, the whole hierarchy of this club, you called it the team behind the team. What about this group impresses you?
Well, you have to put a lot of thought to form a group like that. You have to hear about the group and then you have to think. You can't just say, oh yeah, 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 yeah. And it's not about one guy. It is about that total team and what that team brings to the table. Because when you put that kind of combination together, you're gonna maximize your opportunities. Because each one of those individuals have a calling card that belongs to them. But they all will be able to work together. And it was puzzling at first because you say, okay, you hire a coach, or you have a general manager, you hire a coach, you hire an assistant, you hire this person, and all of a sudden your light goes on because now you see that you don't have any major egos, any one guy that think he knows it all, but you have a group of guys that have respect for each other. And when you come into a situation like that, you definitely need that because you have to maximize everything that you can to get this franchise back in the right mode. The Cleveland Browns have to have feelings that they used to have. We have to believe that this is a total organization, that all of us count, that the history counts. And that's what we have right now.
And this role as special advisor is much bigger than football. In your return to the Browns, you want this to be more, and so does Jimmy Haslam, as he mentioned today, more of an ambassador role with fans, a community role. You mentioned, of course, Reggie Rucker and your great relationship with him and the great work he does in the city. So you want to reach and touch a lot more than just football with all of this.
Absolutely. Cleveland Browns have always been much more than football. Always. And the work that Reggie and the Kids in America and the Mayor's Coalition of Organizations, the work that they do is impeccable. And Jimmy caught on to that right away. And he's talked more community to me than he's talked football. And if you know, in the press conference, he talked about community. Well, when you get an owner that can think for himself and is interested in community on his own, and then we know what we have to offer him, that's a great combination. So my role is a great role because I can dip and dab and I can stay out of the way. Belichick said once that the great thing about me is I knew when to get out of the way and when to be in the way. So I know how to get out of the way.
Well, we're glad to have you back. And Jim, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Now, back to more of Cleveland Browns Weekend on 92.3 The Fan.
Clark, you were here last week watching OTA practices and wanted to first get your thoughts, big picture, on what you saw from this Browns team.
Well, you have to like what's going on, Vic, only because it's change, you know, and change can be good. And they certainly needed to change from what's been going on there in recent years. The club has a tough time winning ball games. I think they have a tough time moving forward. They have a tough time competing in that division. So you look at that ball club, and it's in the throes of change. I mean, not just the coaching staff and administration, but the roster as well. So I was watching Barkevious Mingo with you. I thought he looked pretty good. Actually, I thought Whedon looked pretty good. When you and I were watching him, we were talking about how well he throws deep. He looked pretty good, but it's May. I mean, so I can't form too many opinions there. I have some concerns about the secondary. I also have some concerns about the division they're in. There are three very strong teams in that division, and I think if Cleveland Browns are looking for this team to rise up this year and compete with them, I think they're going to be disappointed. That said, I think the Browns are at least have a foundation in place that they can build on. Now, the question is, do they draft right? You know, do they make the right personnel decisions, trades, that sort of thing? That remains to be seen.
And you made the point about change, Clark, and change comes when you're having sustained struggle, which is what this team has had in too many seasons of 4 wins or 5 wins. But change for change's sake isn't really the answer. The answer is, how do you get better? As you look at this club and as you've observed the Browns over a period of time, what are the areas that you need to see to believe that this change can be meaningful and make an impact?
Well, let's start with the quarterback. I need to see somebody who can hold the job there for longer than a year or 2 years. He's got to have playmakers on the outside. I think you've got a guy who can run the ball in Trent Richardson, but do you have the guys who can catch it on the outside? I want to see some. If you think you've got a franchise quarterback, and I don't know that you do, and I don't think anyone there does either, but if you have a quarterback you believe in, you better give him some wide receivers he can believe in. And I haven't seen that for a long time there, and that's what always bothered me. Going back, you know, to when Colt McCoy was there, and they had a nice run a couple years ago where they beat New Orleans, and then they were defending Super Bowl champion, and they beat New England, you know, and then he took the Jets to overtime. I thought, boy, I think Colt McCoy may make something of himself. And then he got hurt, and he wasn't the same again. And I always felt that you never could really get a gauge on how good or bad he was until you gave him some receivers on the outside, and unfortunately they never did. And you bring a point about change, and you're absolutely right. I mean, the best franchises don't change overnight. They don't change every 2 or 3 years. You can't win that way by blowing things up. And just because you have a losing season or two losing seasons doesn't mean that everyone goes out the door. And unfortunately, that's been too often the case, I think, in Cleveland. And maybe you have some people in there now, and I'd start with Joe Banner, who might be the beginnings of something different, only because he came from an organization that was stable, did not change things like we change channels on the TV. He didn't do that. They stayed pretty much intact for many, many years in Philadelphia. And they had a lot of success there. I think if you can repeat that, you can have success here, but you've got to have success on the field as well as off, because if you don't, then there's going to be that thought by the owner or ownership that we should change people and bring in somebody different just because that'll be good, right? Not necessarily, and that's been demonstrated in Cleveland. But again, I think it starts with the quarterback. You look at, you know, his outside receivers, the offensive line's fine. I question the secondary, especially when you're playing in a division with Flacco and Roethlisberger and Andy Dalton. I mean, I think you've got to find a secondary that can stop some people. But more importantly, I kind of worry about putting points on the board.
Clark Judge from CBSSports.com joins us. Clark, you had a chance to sit down with Joe Banner, the Browns CEO, for a lengthy one-on-one conversation, and you went pretty deep with him in terms of his thoughts, big picture, small picture, whatever, on how this Browns team is going to get back into contention. Give me your biggest takeaway from that conversation.
Well, I just think he's got the right idea in terms of it's not going to happen overnight. I mean, he's the guy that's not going to say, listen, you know, we're going to put out a team this year that's going to challenge Baltimore and it's going to challenge Pittsburgh and Cincinnati. No, he says, but we're going to get this thing straight. And it's a plan that's going to be in place for, you know, 3, 5 years, whatever. But we're paying attention to that. We're not paying attention to the quick fix. And I think a lot of people, and especially some people in the past in Cleveland, have gone for the quick fix. And his point is, no, that's not what we're interested in. We're interested in building something here. And they did that in Philadelphia. And that's why I guess I trust him, whereas, you know, you hear this in another place, you go, I don't know, let's just see it work, because it did work in Philadelphia. Now, they had a different coach. They had a quarterback in place, Donovan McNabb, but keep in mind, when they drafted him 99, I mean, they weren't very good then, but you could see suddenly things coming together. But it wasn't a quarterback they got rid of after 1 year. They let him go and said, okay, you know, we can see, because he played the second half that year, we can see there's something here. We'll make him the starter next year. And they did, and they went to the playoffs. And then they went to conference championship game after conference championship game after conference championship game, went to 4 straight, went to Super Bowl, 5 conference championship games in 8 years, really a nice run of success. But stability, Joe handled, I thought, the financial side well. I mean, they basically kind of, I think they were very creative in terms of they approached players early in their contracts and said, well, we're going to identify the players we think we can build around. We'll give them long-term deals. Certainly it's got to be at some kind of savings to us, but it's going to be a good deal for them because it puts a lot of money in their pocket immediately, and it gives them a long-term deal, and there's a guarantee of continuity here. And I thought they had the right idea in mind, and it worked for a long time. And then they suddenly sort of got away from that, and you saw what happened. The whole thing blew up. But Joe's got a good reputation in and around Philadelphia. And as I said, they were successful there because of him, and especially because of Andy Reid and the players they had on the field. But I think coming away from that, I just felt like this is not a guy who's going to panic. This is not a guy who's going to say, we need to sit this guy down, we need to do this, because he's not interested in trying to go for that quick hit. He thinks that team will be successful and competitive within a year. And that's interesting to me because I don't know. I mean, I've heard that before. I don't know it can happen, but it did happen in Philadelphia. And that was my point to him. He turned it around in 2 years there when Andy got in there. Can you do it here? Yes, we can. Do you have the quarterback like McNabb? I don't know that. And I think that's a fair answer. I don't know it either. But until or unless you get that guy, I don't know that you can continue that conversation.
Clark, this was tremendous as always. We appreciate you taking the time. We look forward to catching up with you down the line.
It was great to see you out there, Vic. Thank you.
I'm Vic Carucci, and I want to thank you so much for joining us on Cleveland Browns Weekend on the PNC Bank Cleveland Browns Radio Network. I want to remind you to catch us at the same time next Saturday morning, and don't forget to follow me on Twitter at VICCARUCCI, and please check out my blog, Carucci's Call, presented by Rebel Wireless, throughout the week on ClevelandBrowns.com.